Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. If you love books, you probably don't need a reason to curl up in a comfortable place to relax and read, or a new season, but there are certain times of the year and activities that a good book is an essential part of. Vacation is one of those times. You're looking to relax, and a book is most often part of those efforts to wind down and not be rushed around. Today's Smart Talk is our annual program on good books to read this summer on the beach, at the pool, in the mountains, or at home on the deck or patio. We have our panel assembled to discuss books they're reading and would recommend. Catherine Lawrence is co-owner of Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Catherine, always good to see you.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
And Travis Kurowski is assistant professor of English, teaches creative writing and publishing at York College of Pennsylvania. Travis, good to see you too.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having me.
And this is a program we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you're reading, what you want to read. Maybe you have a question about a good book to read, some recommendations. Give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. 1-800-729-7532. Who wants to be the first one to recommend a book on today's program from the listening audience? Just give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Always good to see you. I always look forward to this program. I know the audience does, because first of all, we always have a good time. It's a lot of fun talking about books, but also reminds me that summer is right around the corner, officially starting, in 10 days, if it ever stops raining. But we always have a good time with this program. And I see you guys have a nice list of books that you're suggesting, recommending today. I hope you have a good time, too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So there's one book that you both have on your list that you're recommending. It's called There, There by Tommy Orange, just published this year. Travis, let me ask you about it. Tell me a little bit about this book.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I think a lot of us heard about Tommy Orange, at least I did. Back in February, BuzzFeed published a big article on the Institute of American Indian Arts. It's the first indigenous MFA program in creative writing in the United States. And it only first started accepting students in 2012, and Tommy Orange was one of their early graduates, and now he's back teaching at the Institute. And this is his debut novel, which is, I think, easily one of the most buzzed about books of the year. I know, Kathy, you said you'd heard about it at the Book Expo.
Right.
And I just finally picked it up. It was only published, I think, about 7 days ago or 6 days
ago. Oh, really?
Ago.
So it is really new then.
It is really new. I finally picked it up, and I've read about the first 20 pages. I've read excerpts and heard interviews with Tommy, but it's a really, really exciting, I think, genre-changing sort of book. The first explosive 10 pages are sort of a visceral, violent kind of oral history of the Native Americans in the United States. Then it launches into 12 different characters and their sort of urban Indian experience as they head towards a big Oakland powwow.
Mm. So, Catherine, what can you tell us about the book?
Yes, right. So it has, as you might expect, to have a story of Native Americans that takes place on a reservation or with the challenges that they face there. But in fact, this is set in urban America, mm-hmm. and the author tells us that 70% of Native Americans live in cities, and he talks about how that experience makes it an interesting challenge to stay connected to their culture. And the sort of premise of the book is that folks go to a powwow to connect that culture and the diverse experiences of a variety of different individuals, as Travis was saying about that, which seems very, very appropriate for summer. You know, Harrisburg has its own powwow as part of the City Island festivities at Kapona. Mm-hmm. And so I look forward to reading this and seeing what echoes I might see in it.
It is a novel, but how much, it sounds like there's some historical fiction in it as well.
Well, I think it's a contemporary work, so it really talks about how contemporary Native Americans in a city would connect to their past,
So, Travis, what you said that there was a lot of buzz about the book and BuzzFeed, but what attracted you to this book?
Well, I think just, honestly, it was a BuzzFeed piece and reading about how excited a lot of people were about the writers coming out of this program. It was both, the piece covered both Tommy Orange and then Teresa Marie Mailhot, whose new memoir, Heartberries, has also received a lot of attention. But I was really excited about how Tommy was attacking sort of the contemporary novel and adding his own voice to a lot of it. So it's not autobiographical per se, but he's from Oakland. I think a lot of his own
Oakland, California.
California. I think a lot of what he calls an urban Indian sort of experiences is a part of the subject of the novel. And I wanted to see just really what he was going to do. And it's been really a wild ride so far. And I'm just about 20-25 pages in. Mm.
And as a side that you talk about his connection as a writing professional, he also got his start in the literary world actually working in a bookstore, and that brought him into a world of books that he hadn't experienced to that point. So that's probably partly why booksellers like recommending it. Too.
I'm curious, Catherine, at Midtown Scholar, do you have a lot of people that are looking for books about Native Americans?
We have folks who look for books that are interesting, new stories. They come to us because they want to know, well, who is the debut novelist that's getting the buzz? What is interesting going on in the world of fiction today? What's more, the same with poetry, too? What should they be reading to find something new and different that they might not encounter of their own knowledge?
So they ask staff about those kind of questions?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for, why is it that they're looking for new and contemporary?
Oh, well, I think that for us as an independent bookstore, part of why folks would come to an independent bookstore is to be able to get a recommendation that suits the reader in a particular way. We've talked about this on this show before, how to help help an aunt determine what to get for the 14-year-old nephew, to get as a gift for someone, or what they should be reading. We'll have folks who are coming in and they'll say, well, I'm taking a trip, I'm going on a plane, I still want a paper hardcover book. What should I take? I can only take one or two. What should I be reading on my trip? Mm-hmm. And so they definitely rely on our staff to help guide them of the panoply of, thousands of titles published every Tuesday. What should they get that is the newest thing that everyone will be talking about? And this is one of those books.
I'm curious also that, we kind of position this show as books to read on the beach or books to read on vacation this summer. When your customers come in and say that they're taking a vacation, are they looking for lighter or are they looking for just what they normally would like?
I think it varies. So we'll have folks who are coming in and they'll say, well, I'd like the Travis Noah book. What other things do you have that are lighthearted and comic? What do you have that is... I would say there's probably a turn away from the political. We've got lots of books like that that are good sellers. But there's definitely an interest in having something different to read now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We have Anne from Sotera Township says, one of the best, most powerful, most influential books that I've read in the last few years is Dr. Atul Gawande's Being Mortal. Although nonfiction, Dr. Gawande weaves personal and professional stories about the end of life with excellent information on new ways to look at our demise. It reads like a novel with a moving, scientifically informed ending in India. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. Being Mortal is still on the New York Times bestseller list for a while, although it was published in 2014. So far, I've listened to the audiobook once and read it once. It also was WITF's summer read just a few years ago. This book, I still, even though, as Anne mentioned, published in 2014, still a lot of people talking about this book. It gets a lot of attention in the media, and as Anne said, still on the New York Times bestseller list.
Right, and I think we are constantly surprised by the interest folks have in our region in science books, and that sort of book that has a strong scientific grounding written by professionals and yet appealing to a wide audience of interested readers. That particular theme of death and the end of life, that seems to me, Travis, to resonate with one that you've turned to recently for your own summer reading as well. This sense that folks are seeking books that are going to have resonance with them, and it might not just be the latest thrillers. Though mm-hmm. we have those too.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention. I think we escape our lives. I think our television does that already for us on the podcast we're listening to. I think even how we kind of pay attention to the news cycle is sort of, it becomes habituated, and we kind of become sort of, I guess, desensitized, I think, to a lot of things. And then sometimes when we go to books, I think maybe even more today than before, I mean, I think we're not always just one of the escapist sort of literature that we're always kind of been looking for. And I think it's one of the reasons I was attracted to Tommy Orange's book. I mean, And from a very personal perspective, I come from my own graduate work in creative writing. I'm in the literary economy. And one of the concerns about that economy today and the creative writing institutions is the sort of general whiteness of it and a certain type of presentation of what a writing education is or what a novel is. And I was attracted to Tommy Orange's book and also what they're doing at the Institute of American Indian Arts out in Santa Fe to see what I was missing, to see what was different, and to kind of wake me up from my sort of day-to-day life. But yeah, coming back to Atul Gawande's book, which I did the audiobook for, and it was amazing. That sort of book, as well as one of my reads recently that I'm recommending, Philip Roth's Everyman,
mm-hmm. Which Talk is about his. That, if you would.
It's so Philip Roth is one of the great American novelists of the 20th and 21st centuries that passed away. It was maybe a couple weeks ago now, at mm-hmm. the age of 85. He was born, I think, 1933 in Newark, New Jersey. Won at least one Pulitzer National Book Critics Circle Award. Pretty much all the awards you could win, and the author of about 30 novels. His 2006 book, Everyman, I'm Happy, was the sort of book I picked up to sort of think about Philip Roth and sort of get back into his novels after his passing. Everyman is the title is taken from a medieval cycle play where the characters in the play are sort of confronting and sort of dealing with death, with dying, and what a person to think about, how they have to think about their values and getting prepared for sort of that. Everyman is just it's a slim novella of a book. It's 182 pages. Philip Roth's character is a New York City ad agent, unnamed narrator, who we know from the first chapter has already passed, but we get 140 pages of him sort of starting to confront his age. I think he's in his late 70s or early 80s at the time, going through different health issues, thinking about the things he's done wrong, things he's done right, what he's proud of, and sort of preparing for that. It was a lovely meditation on just the things I think we try sometimes to forget and feel great that we reconsider again and again because they're the most important things we think about. And it was a great way to also kind of, I guess for me, sort of remember and consider a novelist that was very important to me as a young man.
And I think it's also a good example, as you mentioned, it was published in 2006, that just because a book was published 12 years ago doesn't mean that, you know, that it's... I don't know, old, it's 12 years old, but still there are a lot of messages.
Still resonates.
Resonates, and especially with that kind of theme to it, because those are the kind of things that many, many people contemplate. So it's always good that we can talk about some books that are new, just published, but also some of the older books as well, and some that are even considered classics. Speaking of classics, now, Catherine, you have on your list, this book isn't a classic yet, but it's talking about classics, Circe by Madeline Miller. Tell us about Circe.
Oh, yes. That is my favorite book to have read so far this spring. And I had the privilege to interview Madeline Miller at the bookstore. We have a podcast of that coming up soon. This is a wonderful book by an award-winning writer. She had a breakout novel called The Song of Achilles a few years back that won the Orange Prize. And she's a classicist by training. She teaches and works in Philadelphia now, and yet she has done a magnificent job of taking the story of sort of a minor character from Homer's The Odyssey, Circe, who was kind of a witch character that led him astray and then helped him, gave him refuge on her island during his many long travels, and transforming it into a story that, I don't know, it sort of crosses the Hunger Games with the Me Too movement, and yet is done with fabulous, really interesting prose. So I wouldn't say it's lyrical. It's not trying to be. It's trying to be this epic and very intimate story of a woman goddess who it was kind of her coming of age story. So the opening chapters remind me of Jane Eyre, one of my favorite mm-hmm. classics. And then, of course, it has all the richness of Greek myths with all of the violence and politics and sort of epic challenge and struggle between the forces of nature and gods and men, in this case a woman, and yet also a domestic story about a young woman and her family connections and their fractures and the children in her life. So it had great level of resonance for me, both as a sort of historical novel, except it's about myth. And I haven't read myth since, you know, my eighth grade. It's sort of a middle school thing to read the Metamorphoses, or my middle school kids are, you know, will read all the Percy Jackson novels. So Greek myth, you might think of as a thing for the younger set, but no, she transforms it into a fabulous storytelling. And that's what really makes it a powerful novel to me.
That is Circe by Madeline Miller. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. It's our Books to Read This Summer program, and we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. What are you reading right now? What have you read recently that really left an impact on you? Maybe you have a question about some recommendations as you're planning your vacation. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have open lines right now if you'd like to be the first to call in. Our guest today, Catherine Lawrence, owner of Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, and Travis Karowski, assistant professor of English. He teaches creative writing and publishing at York College of Pennsylvania. 1-800-729-7532. We have an email from Stephanie in York who says, I just finished reading Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson, and it was incredibly powerful. After reading it, I feel disappointed that York didn't choose it as their one book, one community read. It was runner-up. Not to knock the book that was chosen, but I feel like Just Mercy is exactly the type of book that seems great for a community read, one that raises issues and gets us talking. In this case, the issues involved are how overly punitive our justice system has become and how much racial bias has interviewed into its fabric. But the book isn't dry or textbook E, I just couldn't put it down. And I've always said that that's a good sign of a good book, or characteristic of a good book, if you just can't put it down. Mm-hmm. So are you familiar with that book?
I voted for that one.
Oh, you did?
I did.
So what did you like about it?
Well, I didn't read it, but I just read, we were in Martin Library in downtown York. Right. They had little summaries of each book.
And beautiful,
I was in
there library, with my, by the way.
I'm really, really fascinated by how one, beautiful the library is, but how well-stocked it is, and also the staff. It's fantastic. But I love bringing my kids down there. And I was just wandering around with my 7-year-old and decided to look at the books, and I voted. I haven't read it yet, though.
So a nice recommendation from Stephanie in York. 1-800-729-7532 if you have a book that you would like to recommend or ask a question about. Catherine, I'm looking down through your list, and I know we always have a lot of requests on this show for poets and poetry. And I'm looking down through your list. Wade in the Water by Tracy K. Smith, Brown Poems by Kevin Young, and Still Life with Two Dead Peacocks and a Girl by Diane Seuss. Tell me about those.
Oh, we just have great selection of poetry, and I think it's having a resurgence in, I don't know how that fits to the story of the publishing industry, but it's definitely having a resurgence in the numbers that we see coming through our store of excellent poets. And all of these are just award winners. So Tracy Smith is the new poet laureate, and mm-hmm. here's her new collection of poems. And then Kevin Young was a WITF Pick of the Month for a nonfiction work mm-hmm. he had earlier this year, Bunk, The Rise of Hoaxes. But he's actually a longtime poet, and he has a new collection, Brown, as you mentioned. And then we've got lots of eclectic new work. One that I would highlight is the Diane Seuss, as you mentioned, the title Still Life with Two Dead Peacocks and a Girl, lush, lyrical, and irreverent poems that sort of take standards of class and gender and twist them about. So I think that there's a real vitality in the poetry community, and somehow the publishers are recognizing that, and it's really thriving from my perspective as our store is stocked and they sell more than you might expect. There's really a vibrant poet community in Central Pennsylvania that's eager to see what's new and what are people doing now with poetry that is different from how they might have written in the past.
Well, let's talk about that. That was one of my main questions when we're talking about contemporary. How is poetry different now than it was in the past?
Travis might have more explicit view on this. My sense is that there's such an interest in poetry for having a lyrical, the author's voice is so present on the page, and that really speaks to this contemporary interest in hearing from diverse voices and folks of any bent reading about what others think and trying to connect. We definitely are in the business not just of entertaining, but of helping bring connection together, connecting diverse communities, and I think poets are able to bring that voice and personal vision to their work in a way that's speaks, literally, often speaks by the reading of poetry, so it's very accessible and addresses that just hunger and need for hearing diverse voices and connecting to others in our midst.
It is. I think Catherine's right about that. I mean, one thing just that you see in the bookstore is reflected in recent studies by, I think, I just got an email from the Academy of American Poets the other day, I think from the Chancellor, and she said, I think it was, she was citing an NEH or an NEA study that poetry reading is actually up over the past year, I think a good few percentage points, if not 30%. It was quite a bit. And yeah, I think that's a lot of what you're seeing in poetry, this sort of like return to the confessional that we saw maybe in the mid to late 20th century in the 60s and 70s with publishers like Andrews McNeil, who published Milk and Honey, Button Poetry, who's a oral poetry online that now publishes books. There's this sort of new, and I think diversity too, that just as we were talking about before, then people want to get outside of their own view of the world or finally hear their voice out there in the world. And somehow poetry is this really more personal, more public, and maybe shorter, maybe briefer way to do that. That's really attracting, I think, a lot of young people in communities that hadn't, I think, been reading poetry a lot before.
It seems as though, and it's just an observation, that I see a lot more young people writing poetry. Mm-hmm. That this is something that, I'm just, in the last 10 years or so, a lot of young people, you know, maybe it's not something that they had in school. Maybe they did, but just on their own because they enjoy it. And a lot of it seems to be autobiographical. I'll get the word out yet.
Sure.
But that's how they express themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know about what the data is on that, but certainly we all were taught, I think, poetry in elementary school, maybe into middle school.
Right.
I think some around the high school and college age, I think people turned away from, if they were going to be writers or were interested in the arts, I think they turned away from poetry because they maybe saw it as something that wasn't as important in our country, in American life, and turned to something else, like maybe screenwriting, maybe plays, maybe novels, and these sort of things. But I think there's been a turn towards poetry by younger writers, and I think publishers have seen this and are publishing books. If you go look at your poetry shelf at your local Books A Million or Barnes & Noble, I think a lot of those books are going to be by early 20s or maybe even teenagers, more than you'd expect in those shelves. And I think that probably talks to is because of a lot of things I was mentioning before about this very personal, accessible, diverse kind of way that poetry is attracting people and the voices that are being spoken through that.
Mm-hmm. We also have a really rich community of writers in central Pennsylvania in all the small liberal arts colleges like York and Susquehanna and Franklin Marshall and many have writing programs that are really helping nurture and sustain the voices in our community very explicitly as you and your colleagues.
You know, we always try to look for diversity, not just in the authors of the books, but the different genres. And let's face it, it's summertime, a lot of students off school, most off school. So we have a few children's books here. Catherine, The Big Umbrella by Amy June Bates and her daughter, Juniper Bates, and that's for children's. Middle grade, The Burning Maze, The Trials of Apollo, Book 3 by Rick Reardon, and young adult, Children of Blood and Bone by Tommy Adeyemi. And talk about those three,
right,
if you will.
Three different age groups and completely different books. So The Big Umbrella is a lovely children's story published, authored by a local children's book illustrator, Amy June Bates, who's a highly accomplished illustrator who's now turned to be an author in conjunction with her own teenage daughter, Juniper. And they've written this really sweet story that's an extended metaphor for kindness and inclusion again as an umbrella that is big enough for a rainy day like this to bring everyone into its midst in this beautiful sort of washes of pictures in this lovely picture book. So that's for the younger set, a good book to read to young children or to help them as they're learning to read. For the middle graders, my own philosophy, having middle grade students in our family, is to find a book or type of book they like and then just have many others that are in line with it. That's my answer to what to read next. And one of those is the series. So the latest installment in Rick Riordan's immensely popular Percy Jackson series and its follow-up. And its follow-up is now The Trials of Apollo is the broader series. And the latest issue just out last month, I think, is The Burning Maze. Again, these sort of Greek and other types of international myths turned into popular kid storytelling that will keep your young son or daughter turning the pages and staying up late in the night. And that's what I want to see. So that's a great book. And my kids recommend all the Rick Riordan titles too. Finally, for the young adult, and completely different type of offering, I think there are lots of these crossover novels. It's for young adults, but plenty of adults are buying it. In fact, I would say a large percentage of our staff has personally purchased and been reading this book, Children of Blood and Bone, one of the most talked about debuts of the year. It's basically a fantasy novel, but with a different twist, West African inspired fantasy, dark magic and danger. And we have our staff are back and forth debating, is it as good as The Buzz? Yes, it's better. Oh, not as good as this other one. So it's a book that really spurs a debate. But the author is incredibly acclaimed, and now it's the first in a trilogy. So the second installment will be coming out in 2019.
So if you want to get the kids away from the computer screen, there you go. There are three books that, depending on the age of the child, three good book recommendations. Let's take a phone call from Pat in Mechanicsburg. Pat, you're on the air.
Oh, I just wanted to recommend a book that I just finished reading that made quite an impact on me. It's called Hatchie and Little B, H-A-A-T-C-H-I and Little B. But it's the story of a true story of a little boy and his dog. The dog was a rescued dog. It was an Anatolian Shepherd, which I'd never heard of. And the child had a condition that I was not familiar with, Schwartz-Jampel syndrome, apparently extremely rare, even throughout the world. Anyhow, it's a true story. It's a wonderful read, and I just wanted to recommend it if anybody wanted to read a true story about a rescued dog and a little boy with a really very severe medical problem.
Well, that's a good start for a heartwarming story, that's for sure. What do you think, what is it that you liked about it?
Just all the people that were involved from the time that the dog was left on the railroad track, literally by someone that the train would run over and kill him, literally, and rescued. And all the people that were involved in rescuing the dog and how he managed at some point to get to be the little boy's, the family adopted him as a rescue dog for the child. And the bond between the two of them is just, and the difference it made in the life of the little boy with the medical problem, because it helped to bring him out. But the bond between these two is just absolutely remarkable.
So I just wanted
to share that with everybody.
And you said it's a true story.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yep, Hatchie. Hatchie, H-A-A-T-C-H-I, and Little B.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Thank you
by
very
Wendy
much.
Holden.
All
by
right.
Wendy Holden, Holden.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your recommendation. Are you familiar with the book?
No.
Sounds like a good one, though.
Not specifically, but that it's a genre of its own, the sort of animals that come into the lives of a character and transform the protagonist, and there are lots of great books along those lines.
Right, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. We have another recommendation. Someone called in, Mary from Lancaster, Educated by Kara Westover.
Yes, that's one of my samples here to show you, Scott, even though it's radio, so only you all can see this great book. It's just out. It's a memoir by a woman who grew up it's her coming-of-age story. She grew up in a very isolated community and did not even, the parents were against the medical establishment. They taught her no broader history, so when she got to college, she hadn't heard of the Holocaust. Holocaust. She had vast gaps in her cultural knowledge, and it's her story of coming to age and coming to terms with that. And I think it's already a staff favorite, partly because of this interesting story of being so isolated and getting connected, and how someone does that, written with a lyrical voice, and also because we talked about the turn to poetry. I think there's also a turn towards memoir. We have lots of folks who are interested in coming in and reading memoirs. They don't necessarily say it that way, but they basically, we want good stories well told. And I think there are a lot of great memoirs being published now by all sorts of folks who are telling their own story, this autobiographical confessional turn, and yet doing so with beautiful lyricism, whether they come from a writing, creative writing community or a journalistic side of things. But memoirs are very ongoing popularity in our shop.
You know, from time to time, everyone who listens to this show on a regular basis knows that I'm reading on a constant basis because I'm interviewing with a lot of authors, many of them that appear at your store. And many people ask me, well, what are some of the better books that you've read? Well, almost all of them are good. I'll say that. But I have to say that there are some that stick out to me. One I wanted to mention is The Futurist History.
Right.
By Masha Gessen. This was a National Book Award winner. It is very, very timely right now because it talks about Russia under Vladimir Putin and how it is returning to almost the Soviet Union. I mentioned that, and Catherine, she appeared at the bookstore a few months ago. But just a fabulous book. Kind of a scary book in a lot of ways,
right?
But it is so timely right now with everything that's in the news.
Right. We get a lot of books coming through that I dip in, and that's one of the few that I have read also cover to cover, and it is great. So she's a journalist telling about sort of the history of how the current Putin state came to be, but going back into history sort of and with multiple generations. So in the same way that, you know, a leading new novelist like Tommy Orange has these strands of stories that interplay, her book is written with that level of beauty and rigor, and yet it's a dark, worrisome story. And that those two things go together and make it really compelling, because it's written with the beauty of a Russian novel, a good thing to go to read for your summer reading list, and yet it has this contemporary edge that makes it relevant and compelling. So I highly recommend that.
And she also writes in the book that when she was writing for a magazine, a regular publication in Russia, that Putin said that he was one of her favorite authors, but she was fired for criticizing him. And then Putin went to the publisher and said, hire her back, and she said no.
Right.
Travis, I know that she is one of your favorite authors as well.
Well, sure. I mean, I mainly read her in The New Yorker.
Right, but I think
as the World Cup comes up this Thursday, I think that might not just G7, G8 politics and thinking about Russia as a country and the people there, but as we turn our attention for those soccer fans and people just kind of paying attention.
You have that on your list, don't you? Go right ahead.
I've been watching soccer, I think, pretty continually since I fell in love with it during the 2010 World Cup in South Africa with, I guess it was my 4 or 5 month old on my arm, kind of bouncing around, rooting for America and then rooting for Spain after America was out. This is big global kind of celebration, both of kind of one sport, but also kind of different international narratives and politics and what have you. It being in Russia, the World Cup, I think, is something to consider as we're watching it. So certainly a book I'm going to try to finally get through the almost nearly 1,000 pages of as I watch the World Cup starting this Thursday is David Goldblatt's. I think it's probably the most extensive and most rigorous and thorough history of global soccer. It came out, I think, at least a decade ago, called The Ball is Round, A Global History of Soccer. And it starts out, David Goldblatt starts us out in China, also in South America, in Native American populations, and shows that there's this really kind of fascinating early prehistory around the world of kicking a ball, maybe kicking a ball between a couple of goalposts. But then brings us to the actual early history of soccer as we know it today in the 19th century in towns where they actually kind of just run against each other with someone holding or kicking a ball and the school system in Britain that eventually kind of created soccer as we know it. It's a fascinating, long history. I've been dipping through But I'm hoping this summer I stick to it and get through it.
Yeah, when you see 1,000 pages, sometimes that can be a challenge.
I kind of like just carrying it around. Yeah. It's fascinating. And Goldblatt also, if you don't have time to read his book and you want to kind of get into soccer and get ready for Thursday, he has a great podcast that written down here somewhere. I think it's For the Love of the Game on your podcasting.
Okay. Network. Let's take a phone call from Christopher in New Providence. Christopher, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
My 90-year-old mother, she has two books published, self-published, and she's working on a third one, and we haven't really been able to get anywhere with it. Her second book is actually called Leveling the Aging Playing Field. It's preparing people what it's like to get older. And we have that in a hard copy, and I was wondering if I could bring it by the bookstore, or how do we promote these books?
Yeah, there's a resurgence of, or just a burgeoning of, publishing at the local independent level, whether you're working with a small press or with an independent publishing as you're doing. We feature some local authors. For us specifically, you can go to our website and we have a page on the community that describes how to submit your book proposal for consideration in our shop. If not to be stocked, then to perhaps come and have a special event where you might have a book launch party, that so that we offer sort of our community room as a regular place for local self-published authors to hold book events of their own devise to celebrate their book publication.
Mm-hmm. Well, Christopher,
the first book is only in an eBay, like an e-book reader. That's actually called Leveling the Sexual Playing Field.
How old was she when she wrote that?
She was 82.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, she just stopped snow skiing. My dad was still skiing until he was 84. He's 94, and they were actually featured on WGAL, their 70th wedding anniversary, June 5th.
Wow. Oh, I remember
that.
Yeah.
So cool.
Hey, Christopher, thank you very much, and good luck to your parents. But you know, I love hearing that. You can read, other people can read about the life experiences of someone, or in this case, a couple, that have lived that long, the things they have seen and the wisdom that they have to impart. So that sounds like a good deal. So, thank you very much for calling in, Christopher. And if you have a question or a comment, a book to recommend, 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing books to read this summer, recommendations, suggestions, books that you'd like to read. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call if you'd like to add to our list. You also can send your recommendations, suggestions, maybe ask a question by sending an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Do the same on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Leanne, and we're getting a lot of recommendations here. Leanne says, I recently read Under Our Skin by Benjamin Watson. Very thoughtful and eye-opening work that we read for our church book groups. And a good thank you, Leanne, for recommending that. Book groups. Seems like I hear many more book groups getting together today, too, and you know,
yes,
recommending a book and then talking about it.
Right. We have some long-standing ones that meet in our store besides just the poet. We have two different poet groups that meet for open readings every Thursday and every Friday and have been meeting for decades elsewhere around town and in the bookstore for I don't know, 7-plus years now. And we have several sort of store-hosted book groups. There's a sci-fi fantasy club, there's an LGBT book club, and there's a Midtown Readers. So we also have started hosting book club appreciation nights. And so for when Madeline Miller of Searcy came to town, we invited folks to bring their friends, bring their book club, and sort of do it as a reverse discussion so that people probably hadn't yet read the book, but they came to find out, should they pick it for their book club, which is its own sort of show so experienced, it's definitely about connecting, not really at the bookstore. Most of the folks I know who are parts of book clubs are really, you know, sort of potluck gatherings in their homes. And it's a great way to come together and have a common shared reading that connects you and spurs discussion that may go very far afield from the book itself.
A couple phone calls here. Anne is in Enola with a recommendation. Anne, you're on the air.
This book is not new, but I am a little late getting around to reading it. But the most outstanding book I've read recently is The Day the World Came to Town in Gander, Newfoundland, September 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's one of my kids' summer reading picks. It then became the inspiration for the musical Come From Away.
Right.
And I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to reading it this summer, too.
So, Anne, title and author again?
I don't remember the author. I don't have the book in front of me, but it's The Day the World Came to Town in Gander, Newfoundland, September 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
When the airspace in
the
U.S. was closed and airlines instead had to land in Newfoundland and the story of that town.
Actually got some attention this weekend because of the events at the G7. There were several articles and media reports that mentioned how Canada had, offered airspace and a place for planes to land, 9/11. Dustin is in Coryville. Dustin, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I have a recommendation.
Okay, go ahead.
It's more of the author, but the book I like is Big Red, and the author is Jim Kajard. He's actually from Pennsylvania and lived up in the mountains, I think, of Tioga County for his whole life.
What's it about?
It's about a dog that is, they take it in, and it's a show dog. And then the boy who is, he lives in the mountains, he ends up befriending it and then helps out showing the dog. And it kind of goes through a whole series of that. There's actually a few more that go into it as well.
Mm-hmm. You say that you like the author, though.
Yes, yeah, he's a local author, and he has, like, so many more books that I think all kids should read. They're great. They're outdoorsy books. They have usually an animal as the protagonist.
Mm. Hey, thank you very much. Big Red, is that recommendation familiar at all?
I'm going to come next time with a listing of more good animal-human friendship books to satisfy readers.
We always have a theme, you know?
Yes, right.
Right.
Carlene is in McClure. Carlene, you're on the air.
Yes, I just finished a book by an author called Paula McLean.
Right.
McClain. It is her newest book. It's hot off the press. It's called Love and Ruin, R-U-I-N. And it is about Hemingway and his third wife. It is fantastic. It starts out during the Franco War in Spain, where they meet as reporters, and then the second half of the book takes them to, they're still in love and not married, and they move to Cuba, and they buy their house in Cuba.
That book has gotten a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hey, thank you very much for your recommendation. I'm glad you enjoyed the book. Tell us about it, Kathy.
Right. Well, Paula McLean is, I think this might be her third historical fiction that takes a lesser-known, underappreciated woman from early 20th century America or the world and recovers a romantic story about that character in a really eloquent fashion, and highly recommend her as an author.
Travis, looking at your list, Motherhood. Tell me about Motherhood.
Yep.
Not necessarily. No. That's the name of the book.
I can tell you about Fatherhood. I think it's one of the reasons I was really attracted to Motherhood. And I think I've been trying to read more and more books by women since the Read Women movement, I think, started about 5 or 6 years ago. Motherhood is, I think, ostensibly about motherhood. It's the seventh novel by the Canadian novelist, writer Sheila Hetty. I got kind of turned on to her work in her, I think, 2012 novel called How Should a Person Be, which is, it's something that's kind of, a hot part of the genre of novels today called autofiction, where the line between nonfiction memoir and fiction novel is sort of blurry. Mm-hmm. How Should a Person Be stars a protagonist character named Sheila Hetty talking to an artist named Margot, and Sheila Hetty in life really has a really good friend, an artist named Margot. And the whole novel is constructed around conversations that Sheila Hetty as a person, as a novelist, as a writer, recorded with her friend Margot, and she translated those into a novel about kind of how should a person be, how should a writer be, how should an artist be. This book is similarly, Motherhood, which just came out, I think, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, is similarly an auto-fictional work. The protagonist who's speaking to you, it's a first-person book, and kind of thinking about, you know, should I be a mother? Should I have children? What's it like being a woman's body today? Is a lot like Sheila Hetty. She's in her late 30s, a Canadian, a novelist, working on her seventh book as you're reading it. And the constraint in this book is based on coin flipping. So the entire book a lot of the book is asking questions, and then she flips. And in real life, she says, even at the beginning of the book, she says, and I'll read it here, in this book, all results from the flipping of coins result from the flipping of actual coins. She's taking this from three coin flips that is a sort of ancient Chinese divination that you use with the I Ching, and you get some sort of results about life. And in here, she has this idea, if you flip three coins, they turn out one way, it's a yes. Flip three coins, one way, it's a no. And the book progresses that way. She'll ask a question, she'll get a yes or no answer, and then kind of divulge that way. In the whole book, I'm just going to read one really quick quote here, which is actually a conversation, and a woman at the conversation says this, but it kind of sums up what the entire book seems to be about. The woman says, being a woman, you can't just say you don't want a child. You have to have some big plan or idea of what you're going to do instead, and it better be something great, and you'd better be able to tell it convincingly before it even happens what the arc of your life will be. And that's essentially sort of the whole conversation of the book, and it's really, really fascinating. Miranda July said, and I'll quote, Miranda July is a filmmaker, story writer, artist from the Pacific Northwest. She said, read the book or don't. Either way, your life will be changed by this thinker. I'm being serious here. And it's a really fantastic book.
And that is, as you said, just published a few weeks ago, 2018, Motherhood. You mentioned coin flips and reminded me of one of the books that I've read recently and that we talked to the author here on WITF, How Luck Happens by Janice Kaplan. And it's kind of a, I don't know, it's not a scientific book, but it is not, she talks about how life is not just determined by a coin flip, although, you know, in some cases it can be, but how luck actually happens, a lot of it has to do for preparing for your own luck, but why some people are more fortunate than others. And it's a fascinating book. Janice Kaplan has that history of writing books like that, like, you know, things that we kind of take for granted every day, like a coin flip, and asking, well, why is it that the coin flips 6 out of 10 times for heads, for someone who's called heads, and for one person and not for another? So a fascinating book. Let's see. We only have about 4 minutes left, so I'm going to try to get in as much as I can here. Daphne is in Camp Hill. Daphne, I understand you have a book to recommend.
Good morning. I am just finishing up a book by Carlos Frias, F-R-I-A-S. He, his parents had come from Cuba after the revolution, and he's a reporter in Florida. So when he heard that Castro might be dead, he wanted to go to Cuba, and he had to go via Mexico because they didn't want authors, you know, reporters going in. So he has the most wonderful story about how he met his father's and mother's cousins and how those people actually live. You can see how they have to, a lot of times they don't have enough food. They just have to eat black beans every day or something. And how the city was so poorly run down and everything. So, anyway, it's a wonderful book of emotional connection with the other generation and people that had not seen each other, you know, sisters, et cetera, not seen each other for 40 years,
so,
and he connected them. And
Daphne,
I'm reading it in Spanish, but I think he wrote it in English and somebody else translated it.
Daphne, I only have a minute left, and the title again is?
Llévame contigo means take me with you. That was his father. What his father said when he told him he wants to go back to Cuba. His father was quiet for a long time. Then he said, take me with you. Llévame contigo.
Daphne, I have to cut you off here because I'm running out of time. Thank you very much. We only have about 30 seconds left. I want to thank you very much. We had someone else, a teacher, who had written in Exit West by Mohsen Hamid, an award-winning novelist, talking about a young couple flee the violence that closed in on them from the Middle East and fall into the Civil War. A lot of good recommendations.
Right, that's one of our staff favorites, too.
Is it really?
Best pick of the year.
It's on my list.
It's on your list. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Travis Kurowski, assistant professor of English at York College of Pennsylvania. Catherine Lawrence, co-owner of Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Reading, just as I said, reminds me of summertime, but I'd much rather just leave the air today and sit down and read a good book. Thank the two of you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, topic that is not quite as pleasant. We're going to be talking about suicide prevention. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in.